Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of Why Do You Care? A podcast about the media we love, the media we hate, and why we care. I'm Will, and I'm here with your co-host, Katie. Katie, I have a question for you.
How good
was that intro?
It was so good. It was slick and professional. I totally bought into it.
Okay.
We finally nailed the introduction after 10, 12 episodes. Perfect.
Yeah, we totally nailed it. How's it going?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm still in my Captain America hole, but other than that, everything is functioning as normal. How are you?
I'm good. We're just going to go right into talking about stuff we're currently watching or reading or whatever. But yours is still just Captain America?
I mean, basically, I watched Captain America a bunch more times. I read a bunch of fan fiction. I'm still working my way through the 18,000 Captain America fan fictions that are on Archive of Our Own. I literally haven't watched any new media. Oh, I watched like one episode of Daredevil and was furious. So that's on hold again. I went to the theatre. I went to see Dr. Faustus, directed by Jamie Lloyd, starring your friend and mine, Kit Harington, aka Jon Snow. He was pretty awesome. The rest of the production was pretty shit. But I asked if it was because I had thirst goggles on. Like, I asked the people I went with, like, do I just think he's good because, like, he's so fine? But they were like, no, he did a good job with what he had. So I feel like, you know, I was being pretty critical. But
overall, thumbs down.
Overall, it was just very chaotic and messy. I don't think this guy, Jamie Lloyd, he does loads of theatre and he always thinks he's being hashtag edgy. And he does things like he does Renaissance theatre and then he tries to like shoehorn in sex and violence all the time. And don't get me wrong, most Renaissance theatre does have sex and violence in it, but Dr. Faustus does not. So it was really awkward and weird. But he was good. I liked him. The rest of the cast were good as well. They just had a really shit script and production to work with, you know? Like, people left, and that very rarely
really?
Happens.
People
yeah, and
walked
I was in
out
the
of
stalls.
The theater.
I was in the stalls, so like they're really expensive tickets, you know. And like, yeah, people left. They left at some people left in the first act, and some people left like
wow.
at the interval. But I don't know.
It's
I mean,
so exciting
I was...
to me that like really like people being upset enough to get up and leave a movie theater or a real theater. It's like that's awesome.
You got to remember though as well that like the London theatre scene is super snobby and shitty and I hate it. And also like they're always hypercritical of productions that star TV stars. So we've had like a run of them with like Cumberbatch and Hiddleston and Tennant and Catherine Tate and now John and Richard Madden's doing it. He's Rob Stark. He's around the corner at the moment doing Romeo and Juliet. So the London theatre scene is really snobby. And then on top of that, they're hypercritical of shows that have... you know, TV stars in it. So you always see it a little bit. But, you know, I feel like I said, I think Kit Harington was brilliant and I would like to see him in more theatre actually, mainly because I super enjoyed looking at his abs. But he did a really good job and a fine job in a, you know, Dr. Faustus is a difficult play to pull off. It's like really wordy, not a huge amount happens in it. It's very confusing in the middle section. So, you know, he did a good job with that, but the production was just poor. That's what it all comes down to. Unfortunately.
Well, if you walk out of a theater as like an image thing, like, oh, look at me, I'm too good for this, then
yeah,
I'm not impressed. Yeah. But if you walk out because you're like, I can't take this anymore, not as a snobby thing, as like a, this, I just can't. I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah. I've only done that once.
But
it was just
I've ever
really,
done
really
it.
Bad. It was really bad and I just couldn't watch it. But anyway. So yeah, that's the only thing I've done that isn't Captain America related. That's you know to do with sort of media. What about
you? I think everyone will be glad that we're taking a break from superheroes for a while.
Yeah.
I think
I'm trying to detox. It's not going well.
You're doing immersion therapy. You're just going to read so much about Captain America that you will never want to talk about it again.
Oh, God, I hope that doesn't happen. Is that a risk? Shit, I should start.
Probably. It's like when you eat the same thing every day. You eat like peanut butter and jelly for like a week straight, then you're like, ugh, the thought of it makes me sick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get you. That might happen. Oh, God, I hope it doesn't. Anyway, what have you been up to? What have you been watching?
I have been watching The Leftovers, which my friend Rich has been recommending to me for like... maybe like over a year, a really long time. And I keep telling him, okay, it's on the list. But it seemed like a kind of a very serious and like kind of depressing show and a serious show where you have to like put in work. And I just felt like, I don't know if I have time for this right now, for this
undertaking. I don't think I know about this show. Is it, what is it?
It's an HBO show. It's written by Damon Lindelof and
Oh my God, why
Tom
would you risk it?
Perotti.
Why would you risk it?
Because you don't understand. Okay, I'll talk about it a little bit here.
Do talk about it.
He's the show. Damon Lindelof is the showrunner and the guy who wrote a book that it's based on, like Tom Perotti, I think his name is.
Okay.
But the first season is all that follows the book. And then after that, it goes off on its own. And it's about 2% of the world's population disappearing in kind of like a, what might be like a rapture, you know, end of days kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of about what happens to like the people that are left behind.
Okay, cool.
So it's really interesting, actually. It feels like you have to watch this in the context of Lost, I think, to get it or to understand a lot about it, because like Damon Lindelof is very consciously doing things with this show that he's learned from Lost.
Let's hope he learned something.
Yeah, I mean, and part of it is the mystery that's at the center of the show. It's like very clear, this will not be explained. This is not the point of the show.
Sure, okay.
That this supernaturally kind of event, everyone disappearing and nobody knowing how to deal with it, like the resolution of that is not people finding out what happened.
Okay, cool. Which and he should have foregrounded in Lost.
Right, but I mean, Lost, the promise at the end of every episode was like, there's mystery and we're going to explain it.
You'll find out next time. Yeah.
Right, you'll find out next time. And this one is not like that. This one is, I mean, the excuse that he used, and whoever was the other showrunner on Lost, Carlton Cruz, or something like that, Carlton Coot, I can't remember. The kind of their excuse at the end of Lost was like, oh, we wanted it to be about the characters and their emotional journey, and that was how we wanted to finish the series. And everybody was like, well, that wasn't the deal you've been making every episode for 6 years.
No, that's not how it was sold. That wasn't the advertising.
Right.
It wasn't any of that, right?
So in Leftovers, it's very clear that like the deal is this is about the characters dealing with the emotional fallout of this event. And it's not about you getting an explanation. So it's very ambiguous and it's mysterious and it's kind of slow. It feels more like those TV shows that are kind of like a book where like you're putting in work by watching it. You're trying to put pieces together and understand why characters are acting in the way that they're acting. Cool. And it's not hand feeding you anything.
Cool. Is it got a religious element to it? Like you said, rapture, has it got that kind of like people going hysterical and thinking that's what it is and stuff like that?
Damon Lindelof is clearly obsessed with like spirituality and supernatural.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of it deals with, but it tries really to stay focused on like how human beings respond to things like this with spirituality.
Cool.
So like, it's weird because the show feels, I mean, as an American, the show feels very similar to like the cultural feeling after 9/11.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where this huge thing happens and it kind of is changing things, right? It changes things in like the way that people talk about stuff, and it changes things in politics, and it changes things in the culture. And like everyone's kind of, I think I was like 15 or something when 9/11 happened. And like, adults acted weirder and different, and like the news was different and everything became about this thing. And like everyone was trying to like understand it and like fit it into like this huge disruption of everyone's daily life and what they think about the world or their worldview or whatever. And you have kind of like a national like trying to cope and understand it. And not that something like 9/11 isn't understandable or isn't explainable, but like the event in this show is like really not explainable and not understandable, right? Like all 2%, it's like I don't remember what 2% is, like 144 million or something. People just disappeared. And so people lost like their husband and their kids, and people lost like, you know, their children or whatever. Like everybody, almost everyone had someone that
experienced,
was like,
experienced some sort of loss. Yeah.
Right. And there's no like explanation or meaning that they can figure out from it.
Or closure.
And so all of this stuff happens. Like there's new religions and new cults and new holy figures, and there's different people trying to explain it. And You have like a new government department called like the Department of Departed Services or something like that, the DDS or something, I can't remember what it is, who's like trying to investigate this and like figure out why it happened and explain it.
Incredible.
Yeah, and Damon Lindelof described it as like an emotional apocalypse.
Great.
So it's kind of, you're just kind of watching these people all collectively deal with like this huge event that changes their lives. And it's depressing, but it's also, there is some kind of heart to it, but it's also like, you know, you face some like really dark parts of human beings and what they do in situations like this.
Yeah.
So I recommend it. I'm almost done with season two, and it's really good. And there's some episodes that are like very artful and dreamlike and kind of like moving because of the visuals. They do a lot of stuff that is like visuals and sound rather than characters explaining things.
And
so you'll just have minutes of like characters doing things over music, and you're just kind of watching it and trying to like emotionally interpret what is going on.
Lush.
And then there's episodes that are like very shocking, where like, oh, holy shit, all of this stuff is coming together and now it's a huge disaster, or oh my god, I can't believe this is happening. And there's still supernatural stuff that might be going on and you don't really know, so there's mysterious elements, but it's really good. So I'm sorry to Rich that I hadn't watched it sooner, but I'm really into it now.
You did it now. You're a good friend.
Yep. And I am about to start a new book, and I decided to read a sci-fi book because I haven't read any sci-fi in, I don't know, it feels like a long time.
Sure. What are you reading?
I've been reading a lot of nonfiction. Well, I'm trying to decide between Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson. Mm-hmm. That's the guy who wrote like the Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars, whatever they are. I never read them, but apparently he's, you know, a decent sci-fi writer. And Aurora won like a Hugo or something, and it's supposed to be really good. And the other one is an older book by Ian M. Banks called Consider Phlebas, which is the beginning of the Culture series. It's a whole book about like some society in the future called like the Cultures. I don't really know what it's about, but those are the two. So if listeners have a recommendation that I should go with one over the other one, Aurora versus Consider Phlebas, let me know.
Tweet him. I am desperate to read a new book that isn't fan fiction, because that's all I'm reading at the moment. And I've been highly recommended Alistair Reynolds, who's a science fiction writer. So I think I'm probably going to go for one of his next. But again, Alistair anyone Reynolds. Who has, yeah, super like near future sci-fi, does a lot of world building and tech and stuff, and it's supposed to be very cool. So
interesting.
But similarly, if anyone has any recommendations, I like my sci-fi to have like at its core human drama. I mean, I know everyone does that, but what I mean is I'm not as into world building and as into like, oh my god, look at this description of this spaceship, right?
Yeah,
although that's why I'm trying this one, because apparently he does both. So that might be quite nice, like, for a change. Get you a guy that can do both.
Have you ever read The Sparrow?
I don't think so.
It's really good. It's by this author, Mary Doria Russell, who I think she's like an academic.
Cool.
But that's like the last sci-fi book that I read, which at this point was years ago, where I was like, this is awesome. This is amazing.
Really? Oh, maybe I'll read that instead.
And moving. Yeah, it's really, really good.
The Sparrow.
Mm-hmm. It's about and it's like told not linearly, like there's like two timelines, one after all the events and one before all the events, so it's kind of like you, part of it is mysterious, like how do things get the way that they end up in the one timeline. But it's good, and there's a lot of, you were raised Catholic, right?
Yeah, it's super Catholic. Yeah,
this is like extreme Jesuitness to
Excellent.
This book.
Oh,
and one of the main characters is a Jesuit priest, and it's really
I love
really
a sexy priest. Is he sexy?
Yeah, he's supposed to be sexy, I guess.
Exciting. Love a sexy priest. I can forgive a lot of things if they've got a sexy priest in them.
Emilio, I think his name is.
Cool. Sounds excellent. Okay. Maybe I'm probably just going to read that instead now. Sorry, Alistair Reynolds and all my friends that have recommended him to me repeatedly for months.
I read The Sparrow twice because I liked it so much.
That's
Yeah, like a year later, I was like, I want to read this again. And we did a book club and I got everyone to read it so we could talk about it again.
Excellent.
It's great. Cool. It's like the perfect thing for what sci-fi is supposed to be, where it's about, like, you know, human beings and people and culture and how they relate to each other and difficult ethical questions. And it's really good.
Love it.
All right. So, yeah. Should we do real topics now? Not that that's not real topic.
Yeah, our main topic. Let's call it main.
Well, our main topic is horror movies.
And again, we're on both sides of the fence on this one because you seem to really like horror, or at least are interested in it, whereas I'm like totally anti-horror, like in almost every way, unless it's vampire horror. That is my one exception to the rule. But otherwise, I'm not really into it.
Yeah, so we're going to try to figure out what the appeal is for me and why you don't like it.
Yep, let's do it.
But I have a subtopic.
Of course you do.
That, I know, it's so annoying.
I love it. Go on. What's your subtopic?
It's related to this. It's about like criticism and analysis and stuff. At one point, I think it's still in our show notes, I wanted to do like a whole episode about like what I think about like criticism of art and analysis and stuff.
We got into that a little bit in the fan fiction episode.
Yeah, I know. And I think maybe it's better to just to dole it out when it's appropriate for the topic rather than have a whole episode about it, which means that if listeners ever want to hear everything I think about like criticism, they have to listen to every single episode we've ever done.
Listen to the whole back catalog. Be proper fans.
And piece it all together.
Be proper fans. That's what I would do for you. Gone.
And they have to, you know, listen to me derail topics so I can go off on rants about criticism and how people respond to criticism.
It's good times.
Okay, so this is like groundwork that needs to be laid, I think, so people understand what the appeal of horror movies is for me.
Let's go.
Okay, so I like an analytical person, I think. Is that fair to say?
Understatement of the century, but okay. We'll let you put it that way.
I mean, I'm not like a robot, but like...
No, of course you're not a robot. Fine. No, you're
does
not.
Does it come across in the podcast that I'm the analytical person?
Oh, definitely, especially compared to me, where I'm like, yeah, I change my mind every 5 seconds. I haven't really thought things through. Make outlandish statements based on nothing. No, your approach is always very analytical, and you like to understand stuff as well. That's good.
Okay.
It's a good approach.
All right. Well, so part of this approach, though, is that a lot of times when I watch things or when I read things, like... I feel like you engage in a slightly different way where it's kind of like active, kind of problem solving-y, trying to understand what you're watching, how it was made, the decisions that went into it, why is it working, why is it not working. Mm. It's like a different kind of experience than where you're just watching something or engaging with some kind of media and like just kind of seeing how you feel about it. You're just kind of passively experiencing it.
Yeah. Which is probably closer to how I experience media. I like to analyze it afterwards, but in the moment, I think I just try to absorb it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with either one of those. Mm. And I try to do both as well, but it is, I think there is something fundamentally different about it. It's like looking at a painting and being like, how does this painting make me feel versus like, oh, what kind of canvas did the author use? And look at this brush stroke and...
What were they trying to achieve and, you know, what were they trying to represent or whatever?
What does the author think this is? What is he trying to tell me? What point in his career was this made and who were his influences? All that stuff.
Yeah.
So if you're a person who kind of has that analytical approach, and I don't know if I had that by default, but I feel like I've trained myself to do that now.
Yeah.
So there's this criticism or this admonishment.
Admonishment? Sounds right to me. Yeah.
I like when there's just random words I find that I can't pronounce when I'm on the podcast.
Fascistic.
Yeah. I swear I can say that word in real life. It's just when I'm on... when I'm in front of a mic.
Don't worry. I am always mispronouncing stuff. I use malapropisms all the time. I don't know what I'm talking about. Ooh, so don't worry.
But you said malapropism correctly.
Did I? That's good.
That's I think so.
Yeah, no, but you know, I'm always mixing up words. It's fine.
Okay. So the criticism of that like analytical active engagement approach is, why can't you just turn off your brain and enjoy this thing? Mm. Like, why can't you watch movie X or TV show X and stop nitpicking it and taking it all apart and finding the things that work and don't work. Like, just shut off your brain and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I think that there is like a nugget of truth to that statement, because like I said, I think there is, it is kind of a fundamentally different experience, a different way of engaging with media. But I can't talk about this without having to say that like 90% of the time when people say that, it's total bullshit. And their motivations are like total bullshit, and it's a not in good faith argument that is being used.
Do you want to use an example?
I have so many examples.
So do I. Let's go. Let's go.
Well, these are more kind of like general, what's motivating people to say this, besides the fact that it's like, you know, whatever part of that is true.
That's what's motivating people to say.
A lot of it. But like, why does it need to be defended? So like, one of the things is the thing is actually terrible.
Yes.
And they're pretty much admitting it by saying any contact that a functioning brain has with this piece of media is just going to destroy all enjoyment.
Foundations will just crumble.
Like this is, I mean, people said this thing about like Transformers, the new Transformers movies, right? You got to just turn off your brain and enjoy them. And it's like all you're doing is admitting that this is such a piece of garbage that no brain can interact with it and have any kind of enjoyment.
Yeah.
You know, one brain cell is turned on and you're not going to have any fun, which you're basically just admitting the thing is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you think I'm mischaracterizing that?
No,
that's not every motivation,
no,
but
I think that is completely true. Yeah, totally. There's certain shows that are just utter garbage and people are like, oh yeah, but you don't need to worry about that. And I'm like, this is just going to be a waste of my time then though. Cause what you're telling me is that this show is crap. And like, why would I bother watching it? Right.
Yeah, I have to be like a brainless zombie who's just having like the equivalent of shaking keys in front of a baby.
Yeah.
Like I just have to have flashing pretty lights in front of me.
Now, I say this as someone who has terrible taste in movies and TV as well as very good taste in TV and movies. And like, say, for example, there are certain reality shows where people say that to me and I'm like, I just can't watch it though because I won't enjoy it at all. Do you know what I mean? Like
I watch garbage. I mean, I watched like all of Jersey Shore years ago. I watched like every season of that show.
It's such a great show.
But I would never tell anyone, hey, you know, don't analyze this. I would never defend it as being good. I'm like, yeah, it's definitely terrible.
Yeah.
It is absolutely terrible.
Absolutely. And like, I'm obsessed with Trawlerman and like Deadliest Catch. I love these shows. And again, like I know that they're kind of like garbage shows, but I get super invested in it. I like really want them to like, you know, catch some Greenland halibut and whatever, but I know it's garbage. It's fine.
There's an appeal in those. Like
totally.
There's some skill. That there's something being used, some craftsmanship that is knowing how to hook people into like this drama, even if it's all fabricated and cheesy. And
I mean, but it is fishing ultimately, and two separate shows about fishing.
Fishing can be exciting.
I fucking love them. I'm sorry, they're great.
I mean, the topic doesn't. People watch Antiques Roadshow, like you know.
My partner's mum was on it. There you go.
Well, she was on Antique Roadshow?
Yeah, with some old stuff that they have.
Was it worth like $1 million?
I can't remember. I don't think they did a valuation. They were just interested in the history of it. It was a thing to do with World War I.
Okay, so that's one, I think, of the bullshit motivations for when people deploy this argument.
Sure. Like they don't want to admit that the show they love is garbage. When it's fine. Yeah, it's fine to love a garbage show. We all do
it. Admit it's bad.
I love Olympus Has Fallen. I can't express that more. I think I've mentioned it in like 3 out of the 10 podcasts.
Watch those. And London Has Fallen.
So good. Oh
the
my
exciting
God.
Sequel.
Like literally, Jared Butler kills like 20,000 people over these two movies. It's ridiculous. You've never seen anything like it. It's insane. And they've got that great joke about how they always go for the monuments. It's wicked. Honestly, it's so good.
Just made that joke in the Independence Day trailer or something.
There you go.
Okay, so I think second bias or whatever bullshit motivation for why people deploy, why can't you just turn off your brain and enjoy it? It's the assumption that criticism is inherently a form of negative engagement.
Right.
Like you're going in looking to be negative, looking to find things that are wrong.
You're a hater.
And as a second assumption attached to that one, that going in with that approach, going in being negative, looking for what's wrong is bad and not enjoyable.
Yes.
And I think both of those assumptions are wrong. Like, you know, when you go in, if you go in actually to do, be critical or be analytical, you're supposed to go in with no biases, not to go, right, not going in
angled,
looking for something negative. But you can totally engage, like, in a negative way with media, and that's perfectly fine, and it can be super enjoyable sometimes.
Yeah, like the live tweet, when people live tweet all their criticisms of something. I love it.
Or, I mean, even watching a bad movie, and, like, you're like, I'm going to obviously recognize everything that is terrible and garbage about this movie, but, like, I'm going to, it's going to be, like, gleeful. I'm going to take excitement in how funny and ridiculous and bad this movie is.
Absolutely.
Critical engagement with something, like, you know, critically inspecting something is not inherently positive or negative. And even if it is negative, that doesn't mean it's not enjoyable.
For sure.
Or a fine, totally legitimate way to engage with any kind of media. You do not have to be, you don't have to have a positive approach to anything. So the third one, I think, is this trope called unweaving the rainbow.
Okay.
Which is, I've talked about this before with you and with some of our other friends, but it's the idea that if you understand something or you take it apart and you try to figure out how it works, that somehow that, like, ruins some kind of intangible, magical element of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the name is like, you know, you can appreciate a rainbow when you're looking at it and you don't know anything about it, but once you realize that it's just light reflecting off of moisture in the atmosphere or whatever, then somehow you've taken away something special about that experience.
Mm.
So I think this is really just like glorifying ignorance, but.
So what they're trying to say is that if you try to understand something, I'm just trying to think of an example where that would be applied. So, like, is this, for example, when if you're talking about, like, physical stuff, like special effects, and you want to understand how it happens, it's like, well, you won't enjoy the film if you know that that's a green screen or whatever.
Maybe.
Subtle than that? It's more to do with, like, narrative and trying to figure out why they pose certain characters in certain ways. And
I think it can, it depends. Yeah. It depends on how it's being used. I mean, one where this is me trying to give, like, a fair example where I think the people who would buy into the unweaving the rainbow trope might have a point is like magic, like magic tricks, magic shows.
Yeah.
That, like, there's something special and fun about going to see a magician and not knowing how they're doing it.
Yeah.
And that once you realize, oh, well, he had strings and there was this trap door, then it's like, it has lost something.
All the fun of it's gone. Okay. That makes sense.
There are certain things that if you want to not know how it's done, if you want to not know how the sausages get made, so you can enjoy your hot dog, like, totally fine. But I don't think it's fair then to say people who are not engaging it that way, who do want to know, who are curious, who want to have it explained, are, like, ruining the thing.
Mm.
Plus, I also don't think it's, like, you know, scientists and people who are analytical are usually, like, the most passionate and excited and enthusiastic about the thing that they're understanding.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know any, like, astronomers who think that the stars and space is, like, boring because they know what a star actually is.
Right.
Like, that somehow, oh, a star used to be special and magic and mysterious, and now I know it's just
gas.
You know, a bunch of mass being.
Mm. Is it gas? No. A red dwarf? Like, no, dwarf stars are gas? I don't know. Whatever.
There's gas giants, but stars are like plasma. They're like all this matter being mashed together from gravity so much that it ignites thermonuclear fusion, and then you have, it's just like a giant ball of plasma.
Dude, awesome.
Anyway, but knowing that does not make me think that stars are lame now.
If anything, it makes them cooler.
Yeah, so anyway, I think those are like the three big reasons why people buy into the idea of, like, just turn off your brain and enjoy it.
Do you think part of it as well is I'm specifically thinking about Game of Thrones with this, where people are like critical of me being critical of the bad politics in the show, and then they just try to, like, they're like, just don't worry about it, just enjoy the show for what it is, whereas I'm very concerned about it perpetuating problems throughout society if people are just exposed to this and it's normalized and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to get into it because you know. But so
no
is that
piece
like...
of media has made me think more about the nature of criticism and how people respond to it than Game of Thrones in the last year or 2 years.
So
because
I get this
talked
a
about
lot.
Possibly doing an episode about this. And a lot of the episode, I think, would be talking about the atmosphere around criticism of Game of Thrones. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. There's certain parts in the idea of like, it's just a show. Why don't you enjoy it? Where it's, there's always so many like biases or motivations underneath people's statements like that. Like, is it that this isn't worthy of criticism? Like, as a piece of art, you're saying it's just a show, who cares? It's not worth analyzing or criticizing. Or are they saying like, you should only engage with this in a positive enjoyment way, and that you can't enjoy, you can't engage it negatively? I mean, both of those things I think are total bullshit. Like, definitely, any piece of art is valid, open to criticism.
I mean, people say like, oh, you're taking it too seriously, or people have called me a killjoy, or, you know, whatever. And it's like, well, I think there's an element of people being concerned about engaging with it because they think they won't enjoy it because they find it problematic. Do you know what I mean? Engaging with it critically, I mean. But actually, what I have accepted is that nearly all media is problematic in some way or another. You can recognize that and still enjoy the media for what it is. I mean, I don't enjoy Game of Thrones anymore, but you know, I enjoyed it originally, and it was always quite problematic. So the show, that is. But I think there's another layer
to what you're talking about, where what you're doing is like kind of like social commentary, social criticism.
Yeah.
And I think people also resist that because they don't want
to think
a lot of times they don't want art to be judged that way.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, that's a totally, there's also people who don't think Game of Thrones should be criticized, like from an adaptational point of view, like that's why can't you just let the show be the show
and the books be the books?
You're like, well, it is an adaptation, right? It's the same story. But anyway, I mean, you can certainly separate that out and be like, okay, I'm not going to judge it as an adaptation, and I'm not going to judge the like social commentary stuff, and I'm just going to look at like it as a show on its own, which I think you can do, because there's movies that are great movies but have horrible messages and horrible themes.
Completely.
I don't know. I don't want to get too into the Game of Thrones thing. Because it's a... But maybe at some point we will do a Game of Thrones episode.
I don't know if I've got the energy for it.
That's the problem.
Every time I think about it, I'm like, oh no. So these are the three ways that you can, that people are critical of being critical of shows.
Well, those are like what I see as motivations.
Yeah.
What I see as motivations behind people saying something like, just turn off your brain and enjoy it. That, you know, the thing's actually terrible and they know it. Or that they think criticism is inherently negative and results in a negative experience, right? So you got to turn off your brain, because if you go in critically, that's going to be negative. Or the idea that the understanding something or taking it apart or looking at how it is made ruins some magic of it.
Sure.
But the whole point of this is that I have a problem with the sentiment of like, why can't you just turn off your brain and enjoy it? But there is some kind of core nugget of truth in that idea, because I think when you do engage with a piece of art in that like analytical, active way, it is a different experience than just letting the thing affect you in kind of a passive, receptive, emotional way.
Agreed.
Which is what brings us to horror movies. Because I think for me, it is easier for me to engage with them in that kind of non-analytical, active way and just kind of experience them, which when you are an analytical person, it's like a nice little treat of watching media in a different way. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it is exhausting to always be kind of like watching things that way.
So like when you watch horror movies, it's like immersive.
Yeah. I find myself getting more sucked in and less thinking about like the technical stuff of how this is done, or what's going on with this actor's performance, or is this believable, their motivations, or why was it shot this way? I mean, it's not like I do that every single scene in every single movie. And good movies, I think, have a way of sucking you into them, so you stop, you know, kind of looking behind the curtain at what's going on and you just get caught up in it. But for some reason, I think the bar is lower with horror movies.
Okay. I think that's fair.
And they've done studies where I think this was like a 40-person study, so let's not, you know, it's not, doesn't mean this is true.
Too much weight in it, yeah.
But they expected people's amygdalas to be lighting up when they watched horror movies, which is like the fear center.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, horror movies activated people's like visual cortex and their insular cortex and their prefrontal cortex way more, which is to do with like visual cortex is like processing visual information, and the insular cortex is like self-awareness, and the prefrontal cortex is like planning and focus and problem solving. I mean, this is like, you know, it doesn't mean that that's all they do, but like that's what it's associated with currently in neuroscience. So it's like, it's lighting up, I think, my brain and maybe people's brains in general in like, it's not necessarily scaring me. It's not like I'm having a fight or flight response, but it's like triggering all kinds of other like problem solving, heightened state of awareness. It's high sensation. I think there's a lot of,
sure.
I think there's a lot of movie horror movie watchers who are high sensation seekers, but you don't enjoy them at all. And I would have pegged you as a high sensation seeker.
No, I super hate them. You know, I've been thinking about it a lot, because obviously we, believe it or not, guys, we actually do plan these things. And I've been thinking about it a lot, like this last week, like what is it that I don't like about horror? And I think the problem is that I'm too affected by it. So it sounds like you're immersed in it. And then when it's over for you. Is that fair?
There are definitely some that affect me for days, or like I'll think back on the ending of Kill List, like maybe once a month or once every 2 months. And I'll just be like upset about thinking about the end of that movie.
Yeah.
So it does that a little bit. But I kind of like that, because I feel like it's like, I like being
you
affected
like
emotionally by,
but
art.
You're not afraid. It doesn't make you afraid.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely times where if you're walking out of a movie theater and it's late at night and like I find myself being more on edge than I would be if I had seen like a comedy. Or like you're laying in bed and you start thinking about like, I don't know, you think things that like put you more on edge or more give you more anxiety than you normally would.
Well, like, okay, a really good example. When I was a teenager, I was like, I must have been 12 or 13. And I don't know how this happened. But anyway, when I was a teenager, I wanted to rent Amelie from Blockbusters, right? Because Blockbusters was a thing when I was a teenager. So I went, yeah, right? I know, that retro past. But anyway, so I went into Blockbuster and I rented Amelie. And then when I got back, I realized that I'd rented Audition instead of Amelie. Now, anyone that has ever seen that film is like laughing right now, because that film is the complete opposite of Amelie in every single possible fucking way. And it is a horrifying movie.
Japanese,
yeah, it's
horror
like
movie?
Terrifying. And I watched it at the age of 13 and it stayed with me to the point that I still have nightmares about that film. And that is like,
why did you, was it like the wrong tape?
Yeah,
was in
the wrong
box,
tape was
like
in the
you...
box. Right? And okay. So
you could read at 13.
I can read. No, okay. But like,
just trying to find out the source of the confusion.
The wrong tape was in the box. So, you know, I watched it and I didn't know what Amelie was. I just was told that it was this cool, quirky film. So, you know, whatever. So I'm watching it and it's like, it's so horrifying, like, but I'm still impacted by it. It's like 19 years ago. That's crazy, right? Like, yeah. You know, and so I think that's part of the problem, is that I don't like horror because it just stays with me. It's because I'm a scaredy cat and like afraid, but it stays with me. And that's, I don't like that lack of being able to distance myself
Do
from it.
Do you have like early childhood horror movie experiences? Like, we have this running thing about media that affects you when you're, like, really young and kind of cracks open
your
brain.
Yeah, I think I saw, like, Halloween when I was really, really little. And so, you know, I'm just convinced. I'm always convinced there's someone in the house. Like, always. And, you know, it doesn't matter. And, I suffer from night terrors really badly. And so as a result of that as well, I'm like, I thought about it in terms, and I thought, oh, maybe if I watch horror, it will like exercise all of that. And like, I'll get the frights out during the day and not be afraid, but I don't really want to like mix it. So like, yeah, I think that the problem that I have with horror films is that I just get really, really impacted by them. And then they just stay with me. So I'm like, well, I kind of don't want to just be afraid all the time. So I, that's why I don't watch them. But I do have one exception, which is I love vampire anything. So I'll watch vampire horror, like Kronos and stuff like that. I'll watch, yeah, basically any, if it's got a vampire in it, I'll watch it. But
there's usually a whole different set of themes and stuff going on, I think, with vampire movies versus
like your standard horror,
what other people would consider a horror movie.
But that's basically my exception. But like, I get impacted even by stupid, like horror films are stupid. I'm trying not to use that word. I get impacted by, you know, really badly done horror movies. So like, I saw, because I love Sarah Michelle Gellar, when I worked at Blockbuster, I got The Grudge on DVD to watch, and I watched it during the day because I know I'm a fraidy cat, and I was like, well, I'll watch it during the day and then I won't be afraid. And I was still afraid, and that is a terrible American remake of what apparently is a very, very good film. And I was still totally impacted by it. So I don't know if it's psychosomatic or if it's just how I'm wired, but that's why I don't like horror, because it stays with me and I can't shift it.
Did that also happen to you when you watched the Sarah Michelle Gellar Magic Crab movie?
I didn't watch that. What are you talking about?
It's like Simply Irresistible, and Sarah Michelle Gellar is like a cook, and she finds a crab, and he like helps her cast.
Is it like Sebastian the Crab from The Little Mermaid? What is that?
I think it's like a crab that she's about to cook, and then it just starts like giving her advice help her overcome her, like, you know, insecurities.
She maybe cooks
or something.
Like her life mentor. That is I have to watch this film now. I'm going to write a note. What's it called?
We'll put Simply Irresistible.
That sounds perfect. Is this pre-Buffy? It has to be, surely.
No, I think this is like
What? Oh my God.
Because she got put in all these roles because it was like, oh, she's the girl who does stuff with magic and horror. And
oh, that's hilarious. We have to put, I have to watch it now. There you go. I'll never find that anywhere.
I think it will affect you, but in a different way.
I mean, I am very, people are probably picking up on this anyway, but I'm really impacted by the media that I watch. Like, look at my ridiculous Captain America obsession at the moment. Like, I get to a kind of a state where I can't stop thinking about something. And so if you think about it in that kind of context, like horror is probably not a good genre for me to become, you know, super into and impacted by, like in my day-to-day life, like never leave the house or leave the house because I think there's strangers in the house.
So I think it does the same thing for us. And I just am like, I want that. Like, I want to get back.
But why? Like, why would you want that?
Because I think maybe as I like have become more analytical, I have lost that, like, this thing just really affects you feeling. It's harder to get.
Do you just, and you want to like, be frightened?
I mean, everybody wants, but I think it's just like the idea of art making me feel something.
Okay.
This makes me sound like I'm dead inside.
No, I know what you mean. No, because, okay, like, so I love fairground rides and I love theme park rides. You know, I love being...
Yeah, roller coasters. I was going to ask you about that.
I love being afraid. But the thing is with the roller coaster is once I'm off the roller coaster, I'm not afraid anymore. Yeah, it's done. Over.
But what about going to haunted houses or haunted walks? Maybe that's not as big in the UK as it is in
the
US.
They aren't really a big thing over here. I mean, you have like... I remember going to really amazing ghost trains where they had actual people inside it that used to like scare you. But similarly, once I'm outside, it's done. You know, even if it lasts 5 hours, once that 5 hours is finished, it's left. Whereas, like I said, like Audition, I still think about it in my darker moments.
There's like a weekend. I think this was outside LA. There was like a weekend fairgrounds horror experience where you like go and you like camp out and you can opt to camp in a certain area where like all night you could be kidnapped or you could be attacked by monsters, and you can like go out and explore the different areas of the fairgrounds that are like set up in different horror themes. That would be like amazing to me. I love that.
But you know, I think that would be quite fun, and there's something as well about the carnival aspect of it, and the aesthetic, the fact that it's physically in front of you and you know that it's fake. Like, But I feel like with movies, I do get really immersed into them and I forget that they're not real, you know, like I kind of forget and I lose that, which is weird because you'd think the physical thing in front of me would be more like real or whatever, like real in right. little quote marks. But I think there's something about, the fact that if I watch a horror movie and it does impact me, I'm just afraid for like weeks and weeks afterwards and it will just sneak up on me. And I don't like that lack of control.
Yeah, I think that it makes sense. I mean, I don't know if I, you know, I come off as the analytical one, but
you
I am like
one.
Kind of like a thrill seeker a little bit, I think. But I have like a high sensation, impulsive side of me that is probably doesn't come across on a podcast, but that is like exists in real life. And like, I don't know. Don't you? I feel like I want to recapture certain things sometimes where you're like, when we talk about watching movies for the first time that really affect you, like there's just so, like your brain just gets so blown. Your mind just is blown by like the first time you saw X, right? Some movie you loved, like Star Wars or something. And then as you get older, like media just has less of an effect on you, or you've seen more things, you're more experienced. It's the parts of your brain that are like, this is not real, you know it's not real, or that like, that know what's going on behind the scenes. Kind of reduce the emotional impact of it. And I'd like things that get me back to that.
And so are you only kind of, so is it only horror that will do that for you?
No, I mean, I think all movies that I really like have done that. Like, you know, even Force Awakens did that, Captain America does that. Like, I get lost in books and in movies and TV shows a lot. It's not like this is never happening. But for some reason, I think the bar is lower with horror than it is with other genres.
So when you are talking about these types of horror, though, are you talking about like high-end horror or pulp horror? Or,
yeah.
You know, like, because that's, I feel like I'm okay with pulpy horror. Again, like as long as there are people drinking and, you know, and that doesn't impact me as much. But it's the high-end okay, so you keep talking about The Witch and you've recommended it on the podcast. That type of horror is the kind of horror that I find almost impossible to watch.
That's my favorite. Yeah. So, I mean, horror is like this massive, big genre that has all these different things in it. So, gore fest, torture porn, watching people have their bodies mutilated is like, I can't. I think it does really affect me, but it's also gross. Like, I can't. I don't enjoy it at all. I don't enjoy watching it. It makes me feel bad. I don't want to look at the screen. And I think when I was younger, that like I was less like that. I would be more like, yeah, like, you know, whatever. This is something I'm not supposed to be seeing. Same thing even with action movies that are like kind of gruesome or bloody. Now I have a harder time. Like, I'm just like, I don't want to see it. It makes me feel sick. So I'm not like a Saw or Hostel kind of person. If it's cartoonish gore, like clearly cheesy, over the top blood, then, you know, that's fine. But I like crappy horror movies. Like I saw Zombievers.
I don't think I know about
like
this.
A year ago. It's like cheesy and it knows what it is. Like it knows that it's like
stuff like House of 1,000 Corpses and stuff like that.
I don't know if I've ever seen. Is that the Rob Zombie movie?
That's the Rob Zombie one. Yeah.
I've never seen. No, Zombievers is much more like, we know that this is a cheesy horror movie. It's a bunch of, you know, girls in bikinis at a lake house. And then the beavers come out of the lake and they're zombie beavers that bite people's necks and blood sprays
everywhere.
Those types
of films I'm pretty much fine with. Like things like Lake Placid. But that's not.
Yeah, those are like fun.
I don't know if they're really hot. Like they're like creature features, right?
Yeah, that doesn't do the same thing.
Like Arachnid and whatever. Anything that's got a Tremors. Oh my God, I love Tremors, actually. Yeah,
Tremors
was
great. I love Tremors,
too. I don't know if I class those as horrors. I think they're more like creature feature kind of. I don't know what they would be if they're not horror, but you know that.
Yeah, I don't think those ones do the same thing that I'm talking about with the way.
And I don't think they're supposed to.
But those are a category that I like.
They're not supposed to, though, right? They're supposed to be like a popcorn, you know, beer movie that you just kind of like.
Yeah, you laugh at with your friends
and root for the hero. Like
it's like the piranhas and the Sharknadoes,
and like Nathan Fillion was in that film Slither. Did you ever see that? That was
Oh, no,
good.
I didn't.
I enjoyed that one as well. So they don't impact me. The horror films that really impact me are anything with serial killers, pretty much. I can't watch. And like, I started trying to watch The Killing. Do you know about that? With Jamie Dornan and Gillian Anderson. And literally, like, I had to stop watching it. I couldn't watch it. It was, like, really disturbing. So I don't like stuff.
It's like a TV thriller, right?
More than a horror. But
okay.
It's a TV show. It's great. You should watch it. I mean, I appreciated how good it was, but I had to stop watching it. I mean, that's more of a thriller than a horror, but I think there's some crossover there where you have serial killers like Halloween or whatever. So I can't watch those types of films. And I can't watch anything with, like, any kind of creepy girls coming out of TVs and, you know.
Yeah, we just watched Ringu. God. Like a couple weeks ago.
I just can't do it. Like, I'll never turn the TV on again if I watch something like that. And it's weird because I don't believe in anything to do with spirituality or the occult or anything like that. So I don't know why it does that to us. Because I don't believe it. I don't believe in creepy girls coming out of TVs in my rational state.
Her name's Samara. I don't believe it either. But those are definitely supernatural aspects. Are like key for me. There's got to be some weird, unexplainable, supernatural thing going on. Like how home invasion thrillers and stuff like that. They can make me feel things like fear for the protagonists and stuff, but it doesn't do it for me the same way. So movies like The Witch, It Follows, maybe things like The Shining.
Drag Me to Hell.
Where... Yeah, I have friends that love Drag Me to Hell, but I'm not. It's a little too campy for me. But I like some of those. I like too. There's a class of them that have legitimate like scares and frightening supernatural stuff going on, but are also like self-aware in a kind of winking at the audience. You know what we're doing thing, like Cabin in the Woods.
I liked Cabin in the Woods. I was okay with that one because right from the off, they're being very. Yeah, self-aware and meta, right? You know, from the beginning, I wasn't. They undercut the tension, right?
Yeah, well, Cabin in the Woods works for me for both levels because then I can do the like intellectual engagement and see all the tropes they're playing with and how self-aware it's being and what's referencing and stuff.
Also, Chris Hemsworth.
But then I also
kind of bonus.
It's true. So I can engage with Chris Hemsworth. But then I also, there are moments of that I think are like genuinely creepy and so I can get lost in those. So Cabin in the Woods is good. But yeah, I think...
Well, Scream was the most referential of all the kind of thriller horror movies.
I think I was too young to really get to get the referentialness of that for some reason.
I watched it when I was a teenager at a sleepover and then couldn't sleep and was afraid because I thought he was coming to get me. And then I watched it as an adult with my sister and I started to appreciate it, but it still stayed with me. That's the thing. Scream is ridiculous because it does that. It literally points to all the tropes that it's using, like really very obviously, and it's really clever and brilliant. And yet it's still... I still think he's coming to get me.
That's good one. That's good. Yeah. I should rewatch it because I came out and I was like 10 or 11 and I didn't get any sophistication.
The first one particularly, but the second one too, like they talk about prequels. It's brilliant. Like it's really clever. Not prequels, sequels. And it's really clever. And Timothy Olyphant / Josh Duhamel's in it. I never know which one is which, but you know, it's a good, so even then, there's something to do with... Am I just afraid of serial killers? Like, what the fuck?
I think maybe you're just afraid of serial killers.
If I can get over that, it's fine. Yeah, like, even that film, which is deliberately pointing to itself, hanging lampshades, which is a phrase that you love. You know, it's doing that all the way through the movie. And yet still, I still think he's coming to get me. So it's weird. It's very odd.
But that's what Cabin in the Woods is kind of doing the same thing. I think it's awesome when you can pull that off when you're like, we're lovingly kind of critiquing and playing with this genre, but we're also doing things within the genre that are
smart,
that work.
It's Wes Craven, right, that did Scream?
Yes. And it's kind of him like critiquing the movies the genres that he made popular, yeah.
Yeah, smart. I love it. I love it. It's clever. But it still makes me afraid.
Yeah, I mean, the ones that stay with me are ones where there's some I like psychological stuff, and I like it mixed with like spirituality, unknown, mysterious stuff. And the ones that like haunt me afterwards are The Witch doesn't. It doesn't fall. I think it's a great film, but it doesn't fall into that category. The ones that like haunt me after usually have some kind of very soul crushing ending, or some kind of climax or ending that's like, oh, there's, it just makes you feel terrible about humanity or life, and makes it's, you know, there's something like that that like I'll think about later. Like Kill List is one that I mentioned, which I think is a British film, and I saw it a few years ago, and it's really, it hits on all the things I like. It's very like psychological and weird and stressful, and it's filmed in a very like way to mess with you and to make you stressed out, and then at the same time there's like a supernatural element that's going on, and then the ending is just kind of soul crushing and just leaves you feeling empty and terrible inside. So like that movie I think of all the time because of that.
Everyone I know that has seen that film is completely obsessed with it, like they love it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to watch. It's and you when you rewatch it knowing what it's leading up to, it's like a whole different experience too.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I also recommended Bone Tomahawk to you. I think, I don't know if I talked about it in the podcast, but also another like very kind of stressful, upsetting movie, and an ending that's just like, oh, it just stays with you because it's, I mean, that one is, part of it is that it's so gruesome and intense.
I mean, I'm also I don't like violence in, like, I like action violence that's, you know, kind of almost OTT. And I really, really like martial arts violence, but I don't like gruesome violence. I don't like watching, you know, people get stabbed in the eye and like having their guts broke, you know, and that's a key feature in a lot of horror, especially modern shit gorno, you know, where it's, you know, just, oh, look at these sexy women getting sliced up, you know. So it's, that's another thing that puts me off the genre generally, is that they usually are a bit more gruesome with the whole.
Bone Tomahawk does that by the end. But there's a way, I think, where you use that, where it adds to what like the film has been building to, and it's not cheap. Like, we're just going to show this horrible thing on screen, yeah, and that's going to upset people. Okay, now we've done our job.
Yeah.
Versus like everything is leading up to some kind of big moment of horrific violence. And once it happens, you're just like, oh my God, I can't deal with this.
Sure.
I gotta go lie down.
Sure.
What about, have you watched any of the kind of, they're kind of like, they have like a more classic horror feel to them, but they're movies from the last few years, like The Conjuring or Babadook?
No.
Or It Follows?
No, I haven't watched any of them. Like, because they're supposed to be very good, so I know, yeah, that they'll like super impact me, especially It Follows. Everyone I know is like obsessed with that movie, and I think it would just like, I think it would destroy me if I watched that film.
I don't know. It's really, I really liked It Follows, and I've watched it like two or three times. But a lot of other horror people who like, it's like split. There's like movies that are in this kind of more like highbrow or maybe artistic, I don't know what to call it, category, where they're usually slower, they're usually more subtle, they're usually using like the camera and cinematography and music in very artful but unsettling ways.
Sure.
Versus something that's like a slasher film where, like, you know, there's nothing remarkable about the cinematography in
there's not as your much craft or, that's gone into it.
Right. Yeah, there's like a level of craft filmmaking going on in them, but usually they're slower and they don't go as like full bore as like the torture porn movies.
Yeah.
But that they're still genuinely like unsettling and upsetting and blah, blah, blah. Like, and I think there's a divide with horror fans with those, where like critics seem to accept them into like, oh, this has actual filmic significance and is art. And then horror fans are like, oh, this is like kind of pretentious and slow.
Yeah. Sure.
And so like A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, it's an Iranian movie about a vampire. Have you heard of that one?
I haven't, but maybe
it's,
I will
very,
watch
like,
it.
Noirish and kind of pulpy, and it has like a romance in it, but there's also vampire. I think you'd really be into it.
Sounds
actually
awesome.
And It Follows is like that, and I think The Witch is like that, where it's supposed to have some kind of artistic merit to it, but is also like frightening and scary or has moments that are unsettling.
Sure.
So those are like my favorite, because then, you know, the first time you watch The Witch, you can just get like sucked into, because it's a period drama, and you know, you really can get sucked into the world, and then you can watch it again and see it with the kind of analytical active engagement part of your brain, and then there's a lot to appreciate when you do that.
I wonder if watching something like The Witch would be easier because it's got the distancing element of the fact that it's set in the 16th century. Do you know what I mean? I think so much of it is the way that I engage with media is I'm like, I think about if I was that character, right? That's kind of how I engage with it. So I love Captain America because I want to be Captain America. So I'm like, right?
It's aspirational.
When I'm watching it, I'm like, if I was Steve Rogers, this is what I would do. And so that's how I engage with the movie. So I love Bucky and I like, you know, whatever. It's how I kind of do it. So that's the problem. When I watch a modern horror film about a girl getting killed by a serial killer, I'm like, well, I'm that girl getting killed by that serial killer.
This
could actually happen to me, because like she is in 2K16 and I am in 2K16 and I'm in a street and she's in a street. So there's that kind of, and that's why I think I find it difficult to separate myself away from what I've watched. So I wonder if something like that is The Witch, that is set so in such a completely different context, whether or not I could actually watch something like that, because that distancing element would already be kind of present in the actual storytelling.
But there's a lot of, like, one of the reasons I think why The Witch has gotten so much critical acclaim is, like, it's playing with, like, some themes. Like, it's not just about horror or, you know, whatever. There's, like, some commentary on...
It's like religious control and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, Robert Eggers, the director, called it like a Puritan's nightmare. And there's...
What a great description.
Like, yeah, it is. And there's a lot of like layers in that description, because there's a lot of the movie is kind of about like femininity and like what certain cultures see as like the dangers, the dangerous sides of like femininity.
Sure.
Like the, you've heard the like Madonna versus horror complex thing. It's a trope. It's also from Freud, that like, oh, if you're not, you know, if you're a woman that's like outside the family structure, then you're like, you're totally different. You're not the mother. You're like the slut, and you are like free and you have all this power and you can travel the world and live like the delicious life, which is a quote from the movie, Live Deliciously. And, you know, you eat babies instead of making babies, and you seduce husbands and sons instead of like serving them. And so there's like this, you know, it's kind of like criticism of Puritanism. It's just like, what is the antithesis of like the culture created by Puritanism, sure. The religious family structure, discipline culture, like what's its opposite? It's like this indulgent, dangerous, free, deal with the devil kind of culture.
Cool. Well, I mean, all the best genre movies do that, right? So it's like, it's sci-fi, but it's still, if it's good sci-fi, it looks at these wider themes of, you know, social constructs and stuff. Same with fantasy and whatever. Whereas bad fantasy and bad sci-fi is just, look, this is really ye olde and they've got axes and this is how, you know, this is how they interact
with each
other.
Yeah, there's no point to it. It's not a metaphor.
Yeah, there's nothing kind of aggressively allegorical, which is a phrase that you used recently, which I super liked. So I think it's a shame that I can't engage with horror, because I think horror like that would be super, super enjoyable. And but no, I don't know. I wonder about whether something like The Witch would be workable for me. But then what about movies like Stigmata, which is not really a horror
movie.
But did you not see it? You're super Catholic.
I must
have
seen it.
It's amazing. It's got Gabrielle Byrne in it and Patricia Arquette. And she's just this woman who starts experiencing the stigmata. And he's a sexy priest. So obviously that's why I'm there for it. Probably the original sexy priest. But I don't know. Father Mike in Frasier is a pretty good sexy priest. But so they, you know, the whole story is about this like supernatural thing where she's, you know, experiencing the stigmata and all this kind of stuff. And so that doesn't scare me. And I just, I wonder if first of all, it's because it's kind of just bad, but also I've been scared by other bad horror films. So I wonder if with that, it's because I totally understand it, because I understand what a stigmata is and the significance of it and whatever. And the gross out elements aren't as impactful to me because I just read about it in the Bible or whatever. So I don't know. There's,
it's hard. There's definitely a point where I was young and like everything affected me.
Yeah.
So like, I remember being scared of Chucky and like Leprechaun and movies that if I watch now, they would be like Zombievers,
yeah,
or Lake Placid, where it's like totally cheesy and who cares.
Sure.
But like, for whatever reason, I saw them at a point where like it, I just, you can't separate. Maybe there's the idea that humans like managing like stressful and intense situations.
Mm.
Like we get positive, you know, whether it's like reward chemicals like dopamine or whatever it is that like we enjoy, it's kind of like practice managing stressful or scary situations. But that only works when like there's a part of your brain that knows it's not real.
Sure. Sure.
Like a roller coaster, like, you know, there's fear and risk and like you're scared and you get caught up in it, but there's deep down, like, you know
you're safe, you're strapped
this
in.
Is yeah, there's a level of unrealness about this.
Yeah.
There's an article that talks about the psychology of scary movies, which I'll link to, which references a study that I talked about earlier, and I think they talk about this thing too, like humans enjoying managing emotions. But I think when you're a kid, if you see like that part of your brain doesn't necessarily, it doesn't do the same job that it does when you're older. So like, I can watch Chucky now and there's no way that my brain is going to let me get scared by this thing because it's a doll.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's a zombie beaver. It's not going to work. But like when you're like five, like I think that
you've not trained yourself to deal with that. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe I've not trained myself to cope with horror because I just stopped watching it. I don't know.
Maybe. But everyone's different. I mean, it doesn't mean, like, you know.
I'm afraid of cat, though. But I think the thing is, I watch movies for escapism. And so I think that's another reason where I'm like, I kind of don't want to be afraid. I want to be comforted. No, but like, I want the escapism to be enjoyable. Like, I love thrillers. I'm fine with thrillers. But
what about something like Seven?
Yeah, Seven's fine. Oh my God, I'm just thinking about that film. That film is so, that really gross scene with, which one is
it? The guy in the bed, like decomposing.
Yeah, God, that's so gross.
A movie that stays, I'm not really afraid watching it, but that movie is a movie that like stays with you, especially because it's one of the, again, it's movies that have like really powerful endings.
Yeah, it's a super dark film. Yeah, I don't remember being really afraid watching it. I think I remember being like so absorbed in trying to figure out what was going on and that I didn't really get impacted by it. But I guess he was a serial killer, but it was so extreme. Do you know what I mean? He wasn't just murdering people in alleyways. And I think that's the difference. I think
maybe that has the element of like, it's unreal enough.
It's unreal
enough.
That I'm like separate from it, right? Whereas in The Killing, he's just killing random women walking home from work. But that's, you know, it's different. So that's what I mean about the distancing element and like when you put yourself in it. It's like, I don't know if there was a character in Seven that I could have put myself into. Do you know what I mean? Other than the investigators who were never really at risk.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
So maybe that's the
I feel like this was just a psychotherapy session for me. Thanks, bro. No, but I just find it interesting because like my sister's a big horror fan. She loves horror. And, you know, and I've got lots of pals that are like really obsessed with it. And it's like their favorite thing to do is watch horror films. And I've just never had that draw to it, and I'm shocked by my own inability to watch what are probably quite bad horror films because it just stays with me. So I don't know, I can't really put my finger on it, although it does seem like I'm just afraid of serial killers, so maybe I'll watch horror that doesn't include serial killers from now on.
Some of them are in a category that's the same as watching what, like, good, like, I want to go and I want to watch a good movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting and is moving and, like, something like, I think The Witch falls more into that category.
Yes.
Versus something like Babadook or The Conjuring, which is clearly, like, I've got to be in horror movie mode for this.
Sure.
Like, I've got to get ready. And also, like...
Do you have ritual, like how you watch those types of horror movies?
I do, and I'm much more likely with horror movies to be some level of altered than I am with regular movies, because I don't like regular movies, I don't like that as much. But like if I've had a few drinks or maybe if I've smoked something, a horror movie is much more appealing to me.
Sure. Because you're kind of, again, you're trying to be like super immersed and like impacted by it. Right.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I like that with all movies, but there's something about horror movies and being, I don't know, like, I feel like I want to be pushed. I want to feel like
be a bit
out of my comfort zone, and things that help push you out of your comfort zone enhance that experience. Mm. I mean, it's not like I'm like dropping acid and then watching Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which actually sounds like that would be kind of fun. but yeah, you know, so they are still in a different category for me than I think a lot of them are.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. So
if you were going to recommend me a horror film that you think I should watch, what would it be?
I think The Witch.
The Witch.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, there's not like jump scares. There's not, it's just unsettling, and the whole time period is upsetting, and how they're living, and it's just stressful, and you're just watching it fall apart and you feel bad, and at the same time there's creepy supernatural stuff happening. And
super selling it to me right now, Brian.
Well, but that's, it's not like, you know, a monster is in the house trying to kill these people, like in like Babadook. It's like the setup of Babadook is a very traditional horror movie where like there's people in a house and there's something haunting the house, but like they just do it really well, and it like works really, really well.
Sure.
So I think you wouldn't be as into that, but something like The Witch,
sure,
maybe. And it's cool. It's not particularly, there's some like bloody stabby things, but it's not, it's different than gore. It's like upsetting because of the context and because of like psychological elements more than because you're seeing something gross.
Cool. And what about for listeners? Do you have recommendations for everyone else?
I do have a list of recommendations.
Go for it.
They're pretty much all things I've already mentioned.
Cool.
But
Babadook.
The Witch, It Follows, Babadook, Bone Tomahawk, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, Kill List, The Conjuring, Cabin in the Woods, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Those ones, Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale versus Evil, are like, you know, kind of, they have jokey lampshade hanging elements.
Cabin in the Woods is goofy. I liked it.
Yeah, there's elements of goofiness in those ones. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, as the farther you go back, there's definitely, like, I think Scream is worth watching. And I think I remember liking The Grudge and The Ring and the Japanese version of The Ring. I just saw the movie with Natalie Dormer, The Forest.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I saw it in theaters. Pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But it was a fun movie.
Did she save it because she's beautiful?
No, not really. No. It was all kind of boring and... Yeah, it was nothing, but it was a fun theater experience. And like at some point, there's a lot of jump scares. And so like somebody in the audience like shrieked out loud during one jump scare. Cool. And the rest of the theater started cracking up and laughing. And
wicked. That would be me. Definitely.
But before we wrap it up, I want to know the movies that like super affected you about this. If there was any.
Well, like I said, Audition, definitely.
Yeah, Audition. How old were you? 13?
12 or 13. Okay. Yeah, I was pretty young.
But what about younger? I mean, I'm talking like 5 or 6, maybe 7.
Yeah, so I saw Halloween, definitely. I remember, I didn't watch it. I remember coming down the stairs, and I think it must have been on TV, and seeing the white face.
That's
and that
the way
was,
it happened. Or you're visiting family men, like cousins, and they're watching it, and it's like... They're older than you when you shouldn't really be seeing this, but you're there with them.
Yeah, one of my earliest ones is definitely, I just remember seeing Mike's white face in Halloween and being like really, really afraid. I watched Scream around my I was a bit older then. I think I was 11 when the first Scream came out, but I remember watching it around my friend Kate Trimmer's house and being super afraid. And she had patio garden doors. And I just remember thinking that he was outside there and he was going to come in and kill us. not so much like horror films, but I just remember maybe... because my parents were really good about not watching that kind of stuff when we were in the house. And so if I ever did see it, it's because I came downstairs and I just always have, I have memories of like looking through the banisters at the TV and seeing scary stuff. But I don't know if it was ever really horror stuff. I don't think I was deeply impacted by it as a child. I think I'm easily spooked. Do you know what I mean? I'm like a little bird. Yeah. I'm like very easy to spook. So, I watched The Grudge with Sarah Michelle Gellar, terrible movie, when I was...
I was working at
Blockbuster, so I would have been at least 17. And I watched it during the day in bright daylight, and I was still afraid. Like, you know, just... And I watched The Killing at the age of 29 and was still super spooked by it. So, I don't know. I think I'm just naturally inclined to be a bit fearful. That's okay, though.
So,
yours is Stephen King, right?
Mine is It. Stephen King's It.
With Tim Curry. Yeah.
That is horrifying. That affected me so much.
It's horrible. I can't imagine watching that.
I have a special place in my heart because of it. It is. And I think I watched it. It was probably 5 years ago or something. I watched it again, and it's so it's obviously a made-for-TV movie, and the production values are low, and the acting is kind of bad. But there's still something about it. Probably just Tim Curry.
He's brilliant.
That movie was just, I think, way intense for me.
Stephen King films generally always have moments that are really, really intense. I remember the first time I saw Misery just being like, fucking hell, this is awful. Like, the way they used to shoot them and stuff was just, it's terrifying. And there was another one, which I've never figured out what it was, but there was a guy with like a stick with a cane, and he was in a prison or something. And they had this long shot of him, like with the camera just slowly zooming in on him, and he was not saying anything. But
the Green Mile, maybe?
I don't know. But I just remember being super afraid. Like, there was something really unsettling and off-putting about him. And that was another Stephen King one. So,
yeah. Well, It was special, and then especially because I grew up and I read the Dark Tower series, which I really loved. And it turns out that they're set in the same universe, and the monster from It is tangentially related to things that are going on in the Dark Tower. So that kind of solidified it more as being this thing that's important to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember my parents watching movies like Chucky. I don't know if this ever happened to you, but you're too young to be watching a movie because it's scary or something, and the solution is your parents decide to put you to bed. Which is the worst thing that can happen. So that I remember Chucky being too intense for me, and I was probably pretty young, and I think my parents maybe thought it was cartoonish or cheesy enough that whatever, it wouldn't matter. But it started to freak me out. Maybe I didn't even know, and they could just see he's getting pretty upset about this movie. But I remember they put me to bed,
and
so then
I'm
downstairs in my
afraid.
Bedroom, and they're still watching it upstairs, and you can kind of hear things. And then it's not the solution.
Baby Will, just terrified in bed alone
of a redheaded doll.
Amazing. I've never seen Chucky.
It's pretty. I don't know. I haven't seen.
I've seen
it
pictures
since
of
I was
it.
A little kid.
I know what it is. Because of pop culture and media saturation, but I've
there's
never
been
seen
so
it.
Many.
I've seen very few horror films, if I'm being really honest, because I just avoid them quite a lot. There has to be, the only reason I've seen Cabin in the Woods is because Joss Whedon directed it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There has to be a pull. The only horror films that I've really watched are vampire ones.
The Exorcist also was
never seen it.
Was intense when you're little and you see it. Curse of Chucky, 81% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
I don't think I saw that one. I don't know which one. Oh, I guess Child's Play is the first one. It doesn't have Chucky in the name. It's the first Indiana Jones. And then I guess Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky, Curse of Chucky, Child's Play 3. They've made a lot of these movies. But yeah, all right. So I think you should watch one of these and report back to the audience.
I will. I'll watch The Witch. And
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, I think.
Oh, yeah,
into.
I really want to watch that, actually, because, yeah, it sounds good. I mean, if I'm perpetually afraid forever, though, you have to take responsibility for that.
That's fine.
Okay, cool. When I'm like, can't sleep at 3 a.m., I will be voxing you, and you'll have to talk me down. No,
it's
but
pretty much already what happens.
That's true. Okay, cool. I'll watch The Witch, and I'll try it out. Who knows? Maybe now that I'm in my 30s, I'll be a grown-up and be able to cope with it.
There's nothing wrong with, like, not liking them and being too affected by them. I mean, I feel
I
the same way.
It's good to challenge yourself, though, right? And, like, you know, just because you didn't always like something doesn't mean that you won't forever. I used to hate olives, and now I super love them.
Had you never tried an olive before that point?
I tried them, and then I think I was just, you know, an uncultured swine. And now I bloody love them, don't I? So, you know, you should challenge yourself. It's good for you.
Olives are the classiest thing you can eat.
They're super classy. Yeah. And what else is...
Deviled eggs, other things that adults have at parties.
In the 70s. yeah, exactly. So,
cheese plates.
Cheese and pineapple.
I mean, I like all those things.
Cheese and pineapple. And is that
together?
Is that,
you eat it in the
is
same
that a
bite?
British thing? Did you not?
I don't know. I mean, people eat pineapple on their pizza, but it's not.
Yeah, no, it was a super British thing. I think you had at cocktail parties, you'd have little cheese and little pineapple on a little cocktail stick. It's a super famous thing. I didn't just make it up. I promise.
And I believe you. I'm just trying to wonder how that would taste. I guess, you know, sweet and savory, salty kind of thing.
It's cool. But yeah. Anyway.
So should we wrap this up?
Yeah.
I feel like it's way shorter than our normal ones, but it's because we were doing like 2.5 hour shows.
Yeah, it's true. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover?
No, I don't think so. Cool. We should ask the audience for recommendations for horror movies too.
Okay, so yeah, everyone should recommend Will, who watches lots of horror. So you should recommend him one. But maybe everyone should recommend me one that they think might be a good entry level, non-terrifying, slightly out of context horror movie. It's a very specific brief, but we'll see what comes out of it.
Also, anyone who is on the other side of the horror divide, where they don't like the like pretentious, slow, atmospheric movies, I like hearing from those people who are into like the other kind of intense, crazy horror,
like pulp horror.
I guess, yeah. I really like Alien. Alien is another good horror movie that I think should be listed among these. That's
yeah, I like Alien.
Also very
Again,
slow and atmospheric.
It's the context, though, right? I know aliens aren't real. I'm okay with that. Although sometimes I do see the queen up in the corner of my bedroom, but...
Oh my God.
That's awful.
Terrifying.
No, it's really scary.
Like a little version of her?
Like coming out of the corner, like when there's shadows at night. Yeah. Anyway, no, that is a fantastic film.
And if you think I'm totally off base on my criticism of people who use the just turn off your brain and enjoy it thing, I really like talking about like criticism and the nature of criticism and how people respond to it. So
you're analytical about your analysis.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a good analyst, you got to do that.
It ends up eating itself, and it's awesome. All right, smashing. How can people get at you, Will?
They can tweet me at Will Moyer on Twitter.
Please do, because it's the only time he ever responds to anything on Twitter.
You say that every episode. I tweet now and then.
You've got better. You've got better, yeah. I'm at Kingdom Horse on Twitter. And I'm also still up for lots and lots of stucky fan fiction recommendations. If anyone has any, send them through. They will be gratefully received.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you.
And special thanks to Joshua Duchesne, who is the creator of the music that you're hearing right now.
Totally awesome.
All right. Later, guys.
Bye.